Welcome to Trailblazing Homeschool. I'm Melissa, a homeschooling mom of five.
And I'm RJ, homeschooling dad and credentialed teacher for over 8 years. Join us as we journey with families to discover their own path to education.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Trailblazing Homeschool. Melissa here, and this episode started out, we thought we were going to be having a conversation on schedules and how to run your homeschool day, and it ended up being a totally different conversation, which is also equally awesome. So we are going to be discussing how traditional school, public school, we use those terms kind of interchangeably. We like to use the term traditional school, how it developed the schedule and the routines that it has and why it is that way. And then I am going to talk to you guys about the concept of deschooling and what it looks like to break free a little bit from the traditional school model of school starts at X time and ends at this time, and we do these subjects every day. So that's the conversation that we're going to be having today. We hope you enjoy.
RJ, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing good. So you have more of a perspective on the traditional school, public school routines that we're used to, we're accustomed to, for especially those of us who grew up and went to traditional school, classroom school, whether it was public or private, because
yes,
we've done both. But you were a teacher for a few years. So
I got to see the behind the scenes, why things are the way they are. And the funny part is that the reason why our school schedule is the way that it is, like your traditional school schedule, you know, you get summers off, those type of things, is actually more predicated on business during the Industrial Revolution.
History lesson,
yes,
coming your way from RJ.
Little
these
short
are fun
bit here. So basically what happened was, education started before the Industrial Revolution, and public education did as well. But before the Industrial Revolution, most people didn't have a set schedule. They just had to work the fields because almost everyone was a farmer in some way, shape, form, or another. But with the Industrial Revolution,
they were an elite and they had a private tutor and didn't go to a school.
Exactly.
In a normal sense.
And so when we had that shift to the Industrial Revolution, you had a shift to shift work functionally, right? Everyone worked in a shift, or most people did. And so education also became shift work. And really, education in the United States as an institution, as a public institution, was kind of predicated on the idea that what we're trying to do is create people to fill roles in factories. Because they've created schedules that used bells to determine what was happening next, because the thought was is when they get out of school, they're going to go work in a factory and there's going to be bells determining what happens next.
So and they're going to be well-trained.
Yes, well-trained to do what's next in the regiment. And so it was intentional that the bell schedule, that schedule of shifting between place, you know, like shifting places or shifting activities, was done on a particular schedule, and it was just training you to react to kind of social conditioning.
Because this is basically like the post one room schoolhouse education system.
Yes, and
this
so
is not the same as what how school mm-hmm. was for probably a couple hundred years.
Yeah, this isn't Little House on the Prairie.
No,
and
this is Industrial Revolution.
Yes,
starting with like breaking them into different grade levels and
yes,
building bigger schools
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing.
Well, and the funny part is that you still have one room schoolhouses that exist during this time period. They're just in the West, in the United States anyways, that like constantly moving West in places that haven't industrialized, where they're still agrarian by and large. They still grow food for a living or other crops for a living. But as the cities grow in numbers, their political and social influence grows. And so with them, their model of education also grows, because they're the ones providing much of the tax base. They're the ones that are voting in most of the politicians. They're the ones that have the experts, quote unquote experts, that come in, the doctors, PhDs in education, other fields that are making decisions for schools, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then what happens is in our modern day is the reason why things are broken down the way they are is one, because we just haven't changed from then, at least the spell schedules and stuff like that. But secondarily, because the states and the federal government have mandated a certain amount of minutes that each student is supposed to receive in kind of each field of education. So English, math, history, science. Mm-hmm. And because of that, schedules are developed and worked around how many minutes of instruction, quote unquote instruction, are the kids receiving in a given subject. And so they're kind of, the system kind of self-perpetuates in this way. And because it doesn't feel right, it has never seemed right to have English one day and math the next and English the following day and then history and science. We kind of have this schedule where every day, you know, between X and Y, we do English and then we transition to, mm-hmm. you know, the next thing. So,
yeah. And it depends on grade level, obviously, because mm-hmm. we've got K through 5 or 6, depending on where you live, that mm-hmm. are often still in one classroom under one teacher. They just transition through subjects throughout the day in the same classroom. Whereas you get into more of the middle school, high school, junior high, whatever you call mm-hmm. it, where you live. Mm-hmm. And kids are now, we have subject specific teachers and we're yes. moving from this class to this class because we've got periods that are even mm-hmm. more regimented of like,
yeah.
this period you're studying this and this period you're studying yeah. this, which we'll talk in another episode, but often leads to a lack of integration between
yes,
subjects.
Yes, because everyone's separate. But also with this, you have the fact that because there's a certain number of minutes mandated, certain subjects get more play than others. Mm-hmm. So currently in California, almost all the minutes are allocated functionally to math and English, because those are the two subjects that are most heavily tested on for state and federal testing.
Yeah.
And so there are schools that give almost no time to science and history at all. And when they do, it's the bare minimum because there's supposed to be a little bit of play in the schedule, as far as like not play in the sense of the kids get to play, but play in the sense of room in the schedule to allocate minutes where they're needed. And in which case they give almost always to math and English because those scores, those high stakes testing for them, if they score well, it's good. If they score poorly, that's bad. And that game we'll talk about that in a later episode about how testing works functionally within a state and how money's yeah. allocated to that. But yeah, so the brick and mortars, your traditional school schedule is all kind of allocated on that. And then the funny part is that there's still a little bit of give in there with allocation for summer. Depending on where you're at and how your particular school district is. So like when my dad was in school, if the tobacco harvest hadn't come in, they would postpone school. And
because,
shift it back.
Because he grew up in North Carolina.
Because he grew up in North Carolina.
And when he was a kid, they all went and helped with mm-hmm. the tobacco harvest.
Exactly. And the same thing with, they normally canceled the first day of deer season. Canceled school the first day of deer season because they were going to miss 50% of or more of their male student population, a good portion of their teachers, and a decent portion of the female population as well.
Yeah.
At least for high school.
And it's funny because now you translate that to here in California where we live and from when we were in public elementary school to now, just 25 years-ish later, mm-hmm. there is now this thing called Ski Week mm-hmm. in California. And it seems to have translated across a majority of at least the Western states for mm-hmm. sure that the week of President's Day mm-hmm. in February, it used to be, oh, you just got the long weekend.
Mm-hmm. Or two consecutive long weekends.
Or two long weekends. Then they decide, well, there's no point in coming back in between, so we're just going to create Ski Week
mm-hmm.
or President's Week. And because everyone, like in February, that's when there's the most snow mm-hmm. up in the Sierras and other ski places. So it's funny how the calendar schedule
yeah.
can shift based on mm-hmm. where you live and what the culture is. Local
yeah.
culture, because I mean, I know that there's obviously we don't live in a place that gets regular snow, so we don't have snow days where they have to cancel school for snow
yeah.
days. But in other parts of the country, mm-hmm. they have to leave enough room in the school calendar year
yes.
to make up those snow days and things like that. All because, again, it's this, the government, the states, the federal government are mandating kids are required to be in school for this many days a mm-hmm. year, this many hours a day, mm-hmm. these specific topics, subjects, yes. however that's broken yeah. down. But it's all very regimented, very, you know, structured and mm-hmm. and based on a concept that all students learn the same, all students, mm-hmm. you know, fit into this box.
Yeah, it's, and almost all students will go work in a factory.
Yeah, exactly. They're training them to go be employees.
Yes, employees in a factory. Employees like specifically.
Yeah, that's how the system was designed. But even mm-hmm. now, like, again, it's we're training you to go be good workers.
Yes, you need to show up on time. You need to do what you're told when you're told, and you need to stop when you're told to stop. Whether or not you're done, whether or not you're ready, whether or not you understand, whether or not it's complete, you know, meet your deadlines. Mm-hmm. Even if the quality's not good, it's better to have poor quality than to not meet the deadline. And, you know, there's a place for that, but that's not what I want for my kids. So right.
Yeah, so that's how the traditional schooling, that mm-hmm. we're using the term traditional schooling to apply to what a typical public or private classroom-based school looks like. Because yes. we don't want to just bash on public school all the yeah. time. And really, private schools are structured most often the same as public schools in their like schedules and mm-hmm. requirements and that sort of thing
yeah.
and instruction. There will be obviously mm-hmm. differences based on different philosophies of education and such. But so mm-hmm. Just to make sure you guys know, like, we're using the traditional school terminology mm-hmm. to follow that. Okay, so practical day-to-day life. So in a traditional school where you are teaching, your mandate, you know, you have these periods. So we're saying mm-hmm. we're talking more of the older grades right mm-hmm. now. You know, you have anywhere between 4 and 7 periods a day.
Yes.
What does it look like? Like, they're mandating this instructional, you know, you're supposed to be instructing this many 50 minutes a day mm-hmm. in, you know, English or math or social science or mm-hmm. whatever. What actually is happening in that time frame? Are you teaching that entire time?
Oh, definitely not. Depending on the school, the district, the admin, your own capacity,
the students,
that can change drastically and dramatically, because you have some schools that don't believe in homework. Some admin that don't believe in homework, some teachers that don't believe in homework. And so if you don't believe in homework or you're not able to give homework for some reason, you definitely can't spend all day teaching, because at some point, admin is going to want some proof that the kids learned something. And by proof the kids learned something, they mean a piece of paper with student scribbling on it.
Right, that you can grade.
That you can grade. If it's not graded, it's not real. Even if they demonstrate it the rest of their life every single day in some other way.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter unless it's hard copy of something. And so depending on the day, depending on the subject, it can again range wildly, but my typical pattern would be I would teach for a whole period, like a whole 50-minute period, about once or twice a week.
Okay.
In a lecture format maybe once a week, but then in a conversational format another time a week. And then in between that, there would be time for kind of miniature lessons or working on something specific, giving the kids time to work on things or ask questions. And that, because I can
giving quizzes,
things like that. But also like giving them time to work on work so that I could walk around and have kind of either one-on-one or small group conversations. Because you're not going to catch everyone with the first cast of the net, so to speak, when you first lay out information. And you can kind of see as a teacher who's getting it and who's not, but it doesn't make sense to reteach everything for the kids that are getting it when there's only one or two that aren't.
Yeah.
And so that daily, that's what it would look like. And kind of, it depends on the schedule, obviously, of the school, if it's an everyday school or a block schedule or something like that. But I would typically spend 1 or 2 days lecturing, another day kind of in conversation, conversational type model, because I'm teaching social science most of the time.
Right.
And then if it's something that had, if their kids were working, I would then, you know, kind of linger around the classroom. I typically gave little homework, or I gave only high quality homework. I didn't like busy work because I don't like grading it. So, and functionally, when you have 120 students, you can't grade it well.
Right.
So I'd rather give
high school level is a lot more grading.
I would rather give one assignment that I can actually grade than five assignments that I have to check I did it.
Right. Now, so, there, and was it mostly similar, because I know you did teach sixth grade one year at a public middle school.
Yes.
So it was still a similar.
Yes. We still had the bell schedule we had to deal with. That class, I had to do the same thing where I gave them work, but we did a lot of work in class because they just wouldn't do work outside of class.
Yeah.
And so, and they were by and large below grade level. And so I spent a lot of time working on kind of fundamental skills. And we spent a lot of time just reading, because their reading scores were really poor. So I'd have them read. I read a lot of books that year, because every year I had somewhere between 40 minutes and an hour, or every day I had between 40 minutes and an hour of reading time, where I'm monitoring them reading. And I figure one of the best ways to monitor and encourage them is to actually read myself, rather than to make them do something and then me do something else. Grading, you know, things like that. I mean, I would deal with things, but
yeah.
They seeing me reading is an encouragement to them to read as well.
So that's good. Well, that's good to get an understanding of what a traditional class schedule and, you know, thing looks like. Because even if we, for those who have had their kids in public or private school previously, I mean, most of us don't go and like sit and watch our kids all day or like shadow them. So we don't really know what's going on. I mean, I can remember just even being in school, you know, it's like the first 5 to 10 minutes of class is taking attendance, getting your stuff out. You know, often there's a starter like assignment of like, oh, you know, here's a prompt on the board, write something, depending on what type of class you're in, English class, or like maybe for a science class, it's get everything ready for your lab, or, you know, pull out your review questions. And, you know, so it's just, it's a lot of, there's a lot of gaps of filling time where it's not, you're not spending, you know, if your kid is at school for 6 to 8 hours a day, they are not being taught content.
No.
Even close to that.
And the thing is, like, I am I'm the teacher that forgets to take attendance, but I know who was there. So later on, like halfway through, you know, when the kids are working silently or whatever, I'll go and do attendance. So I just typically start right off the bat and get going, because that's just who I am. But you do lose typically five to 10 minutes in the beginning, even if it's just formalities. Like, even if I wasn't taking attendance, just, you know, talking to kids as they're coming in, having them turn in anything, reminding them of, you know, daily updates. And then there's always those kids who start packing up 10 minutes before the bell. And so you're constantly fighting that. And so if you get 20 solid minutes per class period every day, you're probably towards the top of the teachers. If you average that, but it's hard to do.
Good. So let's transition out of what traditional school looks like and talk a little bit more about homeschool, and what things we can apply to homeschool. I know you wanted to touch a little bit on the idea of rest, the idea of transition.
Yes. So I have found as a teacher, and you see it on the students' faces and in their behavior in a classroom, there is something about spring break that changes the way in which school operates, the day-to-day operates, because everyone, teachers and students both, are wanting to coast from spring break to summer. And it's typically because of that burnout. It is a common trope almost in education. It's like when's our next 3-day weekend? Like, teachers do it, students do it. It's like, when's the next break? So that transition, especially the beginning of the school year when you're kind of ramping up, there's not really any breaks, you know, from the time school starts until like Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so you really cram a lot in during that first part of the year.
Yeah, and so, and then there's a lot of, and then again, after spring break, there's nothing until the end of the school year.
Yeah.
And but so everyone's
also,
done.
The beginning of the school year, because you've just had 2 to 3 months off, depending on where you live, there's that like initial couple weeks of review and refresher.
Yes.
Of like, oh, you guys haven't been learning anything all summer. So now we have to remind you of everything you learned at the end of last year.
Yes.
Review to make sure you've got your foundation so we can move forward.
And I think that goes really well with why I think rest is so important and why I wanted to talk about it is the beginning of the school year, teachers don't typically dread the beginning of the school year. We hate the end of the school year, but the beginning of the school year is fine because we're ready. You know, most of us who teach on a regular basis love teaching, and so we're ready to go back to school. I know that, like, I remember one time when I was teaching, it was Christmas break. I literally didn't do anything related to my job, related to academics. I didn't even read books for 2.5 weeks of 3 weeks of Christmas break. And the last 4 days, I read like a 600-page book.
Wow.
On apologetics. And it was because I'd finally reached that point where I was rested enough that I wanted to learn. And so I think that's, you know, one of the great benefits of a traditional school schedule is the fact that there is that summer break, although now they're encroaching more and more. They're trying to eat away at it. But rest is really important. And it's not just rest in a school schedule sort of way. I think it's rest in a weekly sort of way. It's rest in a daily sort of way. And so kind of from a school schedule, obviously, you know, having those larger breaks around maybe Christmas, maybe Easter and summer are helpful because they give us time to kind of detox from this constant stress and pressure to perform in some sort of way. And we have the opportunity to kind of like, no, I'm good. Like they've shown that like a week of vacation doesn't do as much for you biologically, physiologically as 2 weeks does. And it's not just a factor of you got twice as much time, so you got twice as much rest. It's you're not even really able to let go psychologically.
It's like you
of
have
the
to,
stress.
You have to detox from daily life for a week, and then you can actually
and then you can rest.
Have rest and enjoyment.
And so that second week, if you have a 2-week vacation, I know people, some people that I've listened to a lot, that's like, if you can take 2 weeks, take 2 weeks. Because 2 weeks at one time is infinitely more restful than 2 weeks at two separate times.
Yeah.
And so on a weekly basis, you know, like we try to practice kind of a Sabbath where we take a day and there's kind of no expectations on us as far as our regular things.
Yeah.
I don't check email.
Yep. I, you know, the kids don't have the same expectations of like, oh, you have to do your chores. You have to do this and that. Or, you know, obviously we don't do school 7 days a week. So there's definitely...
We educate 7 days a week, but we don't do school 7 days a week.
Yes. Yes. We can talk a little bit about that too. But yeah, I think, you know, for us, the concept of Sabbath is really important. And if you're not a Christian and you don't know what that is, you know, we believe that God created and on the seventh day he rested. So the idea is that... Once every 7 days, you take a break and you don't work and you don't toil. And it doesn't have to be Sunday.
No,
I think that's
ours is not normally even Sunday.
Saturday. Sunday's actually usually a really busy day. So typically our actual Sabbath is Saturdays. But yeah, it's really important. And also even on the daily side of rest, just knowing that like you don't have to be go from 7 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. So
yeah, and that's where the transitions come in. It's something I'm still learning because I typically want to get stuff done and I work better in the morning than in the afternoon as far as like motivation to get stuff done. But like I was telling Melissa earlier today, like I did my normal morning routine and like I had my phone out from that And I immediately clicked over to my email to start working on those. And I caught myself before I actually like looked at an email and was like, wait a second, I need some transition time, some time to just pause and let it be. Right? I mean, if you think about even like if you went to public school, those transition times between periods.
Yeah, passing periods.
That's where you remember stuff. Like that's where you had all of the parts of the day that you would like care to share with your friend who wasn't there. Mm-hmm. No one's like, so in class today, we learned about Edgar Allan Poe. But you're like, I saw so-and-so in the class, or, you know, in passing period today, and she said this, and, you know, and like, you go on about that kind of stuff, because that's the relational stuff, that's the part that we care about more. But the transition time, whether it's between work and not work, or between breakfast and getting to school, whatever it is important, I think, for us to kind of just, like, let it be.
Yeah.
You know, just take a step back, you know, take a walk outside. Go stand outside in the sunshine for a few minutes and be like right now it's only cool here in the mornings, but it's like you go out and be like, it's a nice day. Breathe some fresh air, listen to some birds. You know, I like to go walk out in our backyard and, you know, weed my garden. It only takes me a few minutes because it's not a giant garden, you know, make sure everything's kind of okay, you know, but that's de-stressing and it's a great miniature rest in the day.
Yeah, take a pause.
And don't fill it. My caution is don't fill it with more stuff to do. So you're sitting down to eat lunch, don't sit there and flip through your phone and look at everything. Yeah. Or with your kids, you know, don't let them sit there and watch TV while they're eating. Because it's like, we don't need more stuff. We actually, in our culture, need less stuff. Because we're being way more bombarded than any other generation before us. Yeah. As far as just constant presence and new stuff and media. And when you're rested, you work better.
Absolutely.
Right? You don't dry out as quickly. You don't hate things as quickly. You don't get as frustrated as quickly. And that's really important for learning, because if you're not rested, you don't learn. Like I said, 2.5 weeks of nothing. 600-page book, which is abnormal for me. 600-page book in 3 days, 4 days.
Nice.
I just pounded through it because I wanted to, because it was interesting and engaging, and I retained a lot more that way.
Yeah, and I think this is a really good thing to move us to talking about shifting your mindset from traditional schooling to homeschooling. And there's this concept that we use in the homeschool world called deschooling. And it's something that I did not know about when we first started homeschooling.
Yeah, it's kind of new.
And I think we kind of did it by accident. Like, we did not do deschooling with any intention. It's just kind of what happened because of the season of life we were in.
Yeah.
When we, you know, pulled our oldest out of traditional school and moved to homeschooling. So really the idea behind deschooling is that you're shifting your mindset away from the traditional school model of this is how things have to be. I have to cover these subjects. Today, I have to, you know, my kids have to be doing school from even 9 o'clock until 3 o'clock. They have to be sitting and focused. They have to have a book in front of them. I have to be their teacher and stand in front of a whiteboard or something and instruct them.
Have a PowerPoint.
I have to have a perfectly prepared and executed lesson plan for every single day.
Just so you know, teachers don't have perfectly prepared lesson plans.
No.
That are executed perfectly every single day. It just doesn't happen.
No, they're just trying to stay afloat.
That's only when admin walks in.
So the idea, again, deschooling is you are going to, if you're pulling your kids out of traditional school, you're not going to immediately go into homeschool mode. So you're not going to have a curriculum ready. You're not going to say, all right, you're using this for math and this for language arts and this for science and this for history. You're basically just saying like, okay, we're not doing traditional school anymore. Let's take a breather, pretend it's like Christmas break, mm-hmm. or summer break, and just do things that help you and your kids enjoy learning again.
Yes.
So we're not saying don't let them read a book or don't let them research something or don't let them watch documentaries or YouTube or play games or whatever. It's just that there's no formal expectation on you or your kids.
Well, and like what I hear you saying is don't let them, right? Mm-hmm. It's no, don't let them. But let them do it because they want to. It's letting them do it, not making them.
Exactly. Don't make them do anything. Mm-hmm. If your kid really loves reading the Diary of a Wimpy Kid series, let them read it. If mm-hmm. that's what they want to read, go for it. And don't make them write essays or, mm-hmm. you know, do outlines or make a book report. Just let them read the book. And, you know, if they're really into playing board games, play mm-hmm. board games with them. If they want to bake, mm-hmm. let them bake.
Destroys our kitchen every week.
I know. it's while we record yeah. podcasts, our daughter is in the kitchen. It's her baking day.
On the plus side, we'll get chocolate chip cookies when we're done. Yes. It's like a little reward.
So true. You know. So deschooling, basically it's really like the idea is you're deprogramming yourself from having to fit into the traditional school mm-hmm. mindset and model and allowing yourself space and time to find your own learning styles, find your own homeschool style, figure out what's going to work within your own schedule, mm-hmm. what your kids are interested in, what they want to learn, not what the state is mandating they yeah. learn.
Yeah.
At a certain grade, at a certain age, you know, screw yeah. the standards.
Yes, it's like I live in a world that's full of standards and I have a hard time trusting them, maybe, is because they're arbitrary as to what you learn when.
Yeah.
And it's not that the what is necessarily a problem, it's the when. Because if I got a kid who's in kindergarten, he's really into rocks and wants to learn about rocks. Well, that's not a kindergarten standard. And so in a classroom, he's not allowed to learn about rocks, at least not formally. But in a homeschool, you'll be like, let's take this and run with it.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to learn about horsebacks or horses, you want to go horseback riding, we can facilitate that, you know, that type of thing. And so it's just this massive shift. And it's not forever. It's for a time.
Right.
You know,
this is just for a season to, again, take the pressure off and give yourself this mm-hmm. transition time.
Yeah. Rest basically.
But yeah, this time of rest to say there's a reason that traditional school wasn't working for us.
Yes.
There's a reason that we chose to move away from that model and into homeschool. And everyone's homeschool is going to look different, but this mm-hmm. gives you that period mm-hmm. of time to start to discover what homeschooling is going to look like for you and what you want it to look like and what mm-hmm. is going to work best for you. So we're going to talk in another episode a lot more in depth on homeschool philosophies and homeschool mm-hmm. styles. So that'll probably be our next
and I think that
episodes yes. together.
Well, and as we're talking about this, it reminds me of just this. When you're doing this, like you as the parent are working on it, are doing it yourself. You're kind of deprogramming yourself to some degree. Mm-hmm. But also, you kind of can tell when you're ready, when you're ready to go learn more.
Right.
You know, and during this process, you kind of have to guide your kids, you know. So maybe if they're all they want to do is play video games, that's probably not a good idea. Right. You know, like some video games are not necessarily a problem, but like if that's all they want to do.
Yeah, this is not like kids free reign. You aren't parenting them.
Yeah.
This is just, you're not required to sit down at 9 a.m. and say, it's school time.
Yeah, and you're also breaking the mold. So maybe if, you know, you want them to still provide educational opportunities for them in a sense, but you don't want the formal go to the park, you know, go on a hike, go to a museum or a zoo, you know, do something out of the normal that has educational value. But once, you know, and kind of a gauge as to when you're ready to end deschooling and start, you know, actual homeschooling, quote unquote, I would say is when they're ready to learn.
Yeah.
Like, are they asking questions? Now, yeah. Granted, you're going to have to facilitate that. You're going to have to like, you know, bumpers on a bowling alley type of thing where you got to like, you know, keep them within the lane for a while. But once they start being like, hey, I'm really interested, then you can say, you know, that getting back to what you were saying with the letting, mm-hmm. when they're like, can I? Yes. Yeah. But once they start, can I?
Yeah,
or like, I really want to.
If you can go to a library or mm-hmm. even a bookstore, mm-hmm. depending on what's available to you, and they're like, and just be like, okay, what do you want to learn mm-hmm. about? Let's go to the library and check out books. And they're just mm-hmm. like, oh, I'm super into airplanes right now. Like, yep. can we check out 10 books on mm-hmm. airplanes? Yep, cool. Let's learn
or
about
fiction.
Airplanes.
You know, they want to read an entire series of
yeah,
something.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a time to give them that freedom. And again, let them, like, really fostering the love of learning. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not putting requirements and you know, boxes around those that you can only learn this right now. You can only do this. You can only do that. So, yeah. And there are different, you know, if you read more articles on deschooling, whatever, like, people will have this formula of, oh, you want to deschool for 1 month for every year you were in traditional school. And there are some people that really need that long, mm-hmm. Especially, you know, if you were in traditional school a really long time, maybe you're not pulling your kid out to homeschool till middle school or high school, mm-hmm. or you were public school, you know, it depends yeah. on where you're at. But
your kid just had a really rough time.
Yeah, if your kid really is had a hard time in traditional school and they just hate anything that is they consider school, mm-hmm. you may need a lot more time, mm-hmm. and it may also really feel stressful to you because you yeah. feel like you're not schooling your kid for the whole first semester of the year, and basically really you're trying to break the thought pattern of my kid is behind.
Yes, that's a good point.
Like we have to constantly fight against this mindset of your kid being behind or ahead, because really the question is behind who?
Yes.
Who are we gauging our kids' desire and ability to learn mm-hmm. against? Like, why is...
How is that even measured?
Yeah.
You know, like...
Who is this magical, perfect student that we're all gauging mm-hmm. ourselves against? We don't know. It's this, you know, crazy metrics that really don't make a lot of sense. So, and I'm not saying you're going to magically be like, oh, I just completely don't care anymore.
No.
Like, again, we're on year five, and because we still use a charter school right now, you know, our kids have to do state standardized testing, and then we get these scores back, and I look at it and go, oh no. And then I have to like slap myself and go, Melissa, stop it. Mm-hmm. it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know how to gauge your children, like, and you will learn. You may feel like you don't know right now, but like, you know your kids better than anyone else. So you're able to see, are they where they should be? Are they slacking off? Are they... Mm-hmm. You know, do you need to push them harder, or do you need to step back and pull back a little bit and give them space? So that's the idea behind deschooling, and why it is important. Wow, we talked a lot more on those things than I anticipated.
Well, maybe we should end it here, and then we can come back with the next part.
All right.
Shortly.
Yes, so we're going to break this up into two episodes. So that was kind of the laying the foundation of, you know, moving out from the traditional school model. And we, in part two, we're going to discuss our daily routines, our schedules, what we actually do in our family's homeschool life, because I know you're curious. And it's really good to just hear the candid realness mm-hmm. of homeschool families. So stay tuned for part two.
Hey guys, Melissa here again, real quick to ask you a huge favor. If you could head over to iTunes and leave a review for this podcast, that would be amazing. our podcast can only reach people if they know it exists. So please leave us a review on iTunes. And if you love this episode or any of our episodes, make sure to share it with your friends, send it to them, or tag us on Instagram at Trailblazing Homeschool. If you want to learn more about us and how you can connect with us, head over to our website, www.trailblazinghomeschool.com. Of course, all those links are in the show notes.